Wow.
Andy, how do we mute our phones now?
Yeah.
I actually have the ability to mute everyone. If you have a mute button on your phone, that will work. I'm not sure of another key command that will mute you.
Okay, gotcha.
If you'd like to press *7, that's typically it for many dial-in systems, but I would kind of look towards your mute button on your phone, which should be an option on any smartphone, and maybe an option for others. If I hear a lot of background noise on any specific line, I actually have the ability to mute individually now, which is a new power that we didn't have before, which is pretty cool. So we'll use that in the future for those who fall asleep on the calls and things of that nature. But the recording has started. I'm not sure if anyone heard any indication that it started, but I had an indication on this side that it is recording. Okay, you did. I didn't hear
it
on my side, so that's great.
Yep. It was real quick.
Well, okay. That's good. We don't have our usual lag time for our recording. But anyway, for everyone who is new and people who've been here before, my name's Andy Marks. I am one of our hosts here. I am one of the hosts here, and I actually met the other two hosts close to 5 years ago now. Back in 2014, June of 2014, we met in Pittsburgh for the 2014 LHON conference that year and realized how great it was to meet others who had LHON and chat with them and share tips about our ways of navigating our new life. We actually, all three, had just recently been diagnosed at the time and wanted to know if there was a way to kind of stretch the benefits of the conference throughout the year, which is when we started this LHON call back in August of 2014. Since then, we've been chatting once a month, the first Wednesday of every month, always the same time here at 8 o'clock on the East Coast, 5 o'clock on the West Coast here in the U.S. And as you've heard, whether you're new or not, we always have callers from other countries too, which is always really exciting to us. Each month we have different guest speakers come in and share their stories. But before I get too far along, I want to go ahead and introduce our other hosts. And as I always like to say, if you don't really enjoy tonight's call, I recommend you call in for a few others because you'll always get a different perspective with a different host. And I am definitely, the worst of the three of us. So I'll introduce the others here quickly. I'm not sure if Maria's here, but Maria, are you there? She's not, but if you'd like to call in for another time, I'm sure you can meet her. And she's also very, very active online. So if you don't know Maria, you will soon. And then I know Jessica just joined us. She was nice enough to call into the old group, but here's Jessica.
Hi, everyone. And totally not true. He is not the worst. I think I might be, so.
We can debate that later.
I never remember the key command for all the technology, and now I don't have to, so it's fantastic.
There you go. And it doesn't matter moving forward anyway. With that, I just want to give a few ground rules for what we kind of aim to accomplish with these calls. As I said early on, the goal is really just to stretch the benefits that we get from meeting other people with LHON to each month of the year. There are things that happen at the LHON conference, like conversations around the disease and medical advice and legal advice and employment advice. Those types of things we really don't dig into here on the calls because we're not experts on those. So if we kind of lean into those a little bit this evening, I'll kind of steer us back toward the things that we are experts on, and that is kind of living with this vision loss. We have a bunch of people here, some people who've been affected long, many years and decades, and others who are newer to the diagnosis, and we all benefit from any kind of story here, which is why each month we have a different caller, guest speaker come share a little bit about their story, and I will kind of introduce you all to our new speaker for this month. He's actually joined us with his sister as well, but I'm going to want to isolate which of these phone numbers are theirs so I can unmute them. So if you could, Sage, if you could just say hello to everyone and just speak for a few minutes so I can isolate which of these phone numbers is yours, that'd be great.
Okay. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you just fine. Just keep talking for a minute because I'm figuring that out. if you just want to tell everyone where you live and how old you are and just a little introduction, that'd be great.
Definitely. So I am 22. I'm from Huntsville, Alabama. I'm currently a student right now at the University of Alabama. My sister is 6 years older than I. She's down in Florida right now. She currently lives there. But yeah, that's just some light background on me.
That's fantastic.
We're
going to dig into your story more too, but just because I'm having a bit of a learning curve here with this new system, I want to go ahead and figure out which caller's Lee as well. So Lee, if you could just kind of say hello and tell everyone where you're calling from, that'd be great too.
Yeah, hello everybody. This is Lee. I'm Sage's sister. Like you said, he's 22. I'm 28, so there's 6 years between us. I also went to the University of Alabama, but I currently live down in South Florida in Jupiter, Florida.
Is Lee?
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I have you here. We'll unmute if we have to later on, but I'm going to go ahead and mute everyone here because I know I'm hearing a little background noise, and I'll go ahead and unmute you, Sage, so we can dig into your story a little bit.
Sounds great.
All right. I believe everyone should be able to hear me and Sage right now. Sage, are you
there? Yes, I'm unmuted as well. Yes, I am.
All right. Fantastic. Others can hear me, so that's great too. Okay, so you gave us a little bit here, but not to spoil it, but yes, we've had callers and speakers who are kind of a part of this community for a number of reasons. Those who are here because they are friends and family of those affected, those who are carriers of the gene, and also many who are affected. And I know you were affected. Do you mind giving us a little bit of your story up until when you were affected and kind of what your life had been like and where you had lived until then?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've grown up in Huntsville, Alabama my whole life. I played sports. I hunted and fished. I've always loved the outdoors and activities, just keeping myself active, I guess. And I've always loved water sports, wakeboarding, anything like that. But then leading into my vision loss, I guess that was kind of what I was doing when I realized that playing soccer on the plane.
So how old were you when you started noticing signs of losing your vision?
Right around my 18th birthday. That was the middle of the summer going into my senior year of high school. And about a week or so after my birthday, I kind of started to realize, driving around, reading road signs and things like that, my light sensitivity was getting pretty ridiculous, and reading things was honestly getting very challenging. So there was definitely something going on very fast.
At the time, were you noticing it in both eyes, or was it more of a, you were kind of just noticing your daily vision was a little different?
Right. I was just seeing my daily vision was slowly going out in one eye, in my right eye only at first, and it slowly was just a gray spot that kind of popped up. And when my right eye got a little bit further along than the other, the left eye kind of started doing the same thing until they eventually equaled out. But that happened over a little bit longer process.
And so you were 18, so you're getting ready for your senior year, which is obviously a super pivotal time, and lots of things are going through you, and you're
Absolutely.
Going through all these kind of cool things in high school, getting ready for like prom, your senior year, sports, college applications. Talk to me about all of those things that were going on that summer. Do you remember things that were going on? Were you doing camps? Were you participating in clubs or anything that summer that were going on as you were losing your vision here?
Absolutely. So, I mean, I was getting back into playing tennis a lot, and I golfed a decent bit, but I really was diving back into tennis again and just trying to get back with that. And I was applying to Alabama and a couple other schools and taking the ACT test and whatnot, hoping to obviously go to college. But I lost my vision right before I needed to take it again to hopefully get a good enough score. But I eventually worked through that with my vision loss. And that all kind of worked itself out at that point in time during the school year. But leading up to that, having no expectation of any, or anything, I just tried to carry out my day to day, and seeing how it was going away definitely was scary, but it
do you remember noticing it playing tennis even?
Absolutely. I right before I was diagnosed, a few weeks before, I was at tennis tryouts actually for the high school I was attending, and I couldn't even serve the ball. I couldn't see it after about 3 or 4 weeks of my birthday, I guess you could say, in the middle of the summer, and it just eventually led where I couldn't return a ball if I just dropped it and hit the ball with my racket. I couldn't even, the contrast from that, from the ball had already faded away with my vision.
But, okay. It's a super familiar story to a lot of people here. And I think that's one of the first things that we all noticed when we went to a conference or when people call into their first LHON call, is just someone they've never met who lives in a different part of the world sharing a story that sounds so different, but at the same time, so familiar to all of us. Just those little daily activities that you start to notice, this feels different. This feels weird. I can't see that little thing that I never noticed I could see, but now I definitely can notice that I can't see anymore. I mean, in your case, it's a tennis ball. In others, it's something they're reading on their phone, or it's their children's eyes, or any number of things that they never paid attention to being able to see, but one day you notice you can't see that anymore. So this is now summer between your junior and senior year. What were your next steps at that point?
Honestly, we just were back and forth between a bunch of doctors, and at first I was actually misdiagnosed by a neurologist with MS, and that didn't last too long. I was re-diagnosed within a month by Nancy Newman, and she truly diagnosed me. But when that happened, we kind of knew where to go with that. And with school and everything, we just got on the same page with all of my teachers and everything, and all of the accommodations I would have needed to get through my senior year and to go to college. And I didn't know if I needed to drop out of school and start homeschooling, or if I just needed to take a few steps to talk to a few people. And I got hooked up with the Alabama Institute for the Deaf and Blind, and they started to see my parameters of my vision and my knowledge on technology and everything. And I kind of started to learn a little bit quicker. I was learning assistive technology with a computer 3 days a week, and I was learning Braille twice a week at that point in time in high school. And that led on to going to the gender school that summer after my senior year to learn how to learn how to live independently and
be better organized. This is now just before college.
Yes.
Okay.
And
how long were you there?
About roughly 5 weeks. And there I learned a bunch of Braille assistive technology, just bettering my skills and getting more advanced with screen readers for my laptop and knowing more how to navigate my cell phone with VoiceOver and things like that. But as far as day-to-day goes, I just, in terms of even cooking safety or washing my clothes even to know I'm matching the right socks with the other, that's where I kind of learned how to take further steps, even in the college, living on my own with a roommate, even when they may not be there or anything.
Yeah. Well, what was a typical day at that facility like then? I mean, you said you were there 4 or 5 weeks. what was a day like there?
Right. So I would wake up every day around 7 and have breakfast. The first class was at 8, and I would get done every day at 3:30. Each class was probably about an hour to an hour and a half, depending on how much time you would have in between once you would finish like cleaning everything up that you were learning for the day, if you could learn anything else. And we would be done at 3:30. I'd get done. I had a workout class that I would do for my last class of the day. So I would go home and go back to my room and shower, and dinner would be at 5. And from then on, it was just every day over. That was every day for me for my summer and for the whole first 5 weeks of my summer going into college.
Okay. And so, I mean, a lot of people talk about this transition. A lot of people who have LHO and either lose vision just before college like you did or even in college. What was transitioning to college like without vision? You obviously had never seen that campus with vision. Or, I mean, maybe you had because you probably visited. But, I mean, talk to me about acclimating to school while you're acclimating to vision loss.
Right. And at the school, I had learned a good bit about mobility and walking around with traffic and things like that. But when I got to school, I had an O&M teach me my routes to get to each class. And at that point in time, I was living in a dorm. So I learned all the bus routes, and they would stop at their given stop, and I would have anywhere from 500 to 600 yards at most that I would have to walk to get to the building that I would need to go to my classes. And for the following, I did that as well the following year, but now with all of my major classes, I'm taking all of my classes in the same buildings and everything. So I'm just very familiar with the campus, and I can get to the disability office on my own now walking. And I try not to use the buses when I don't need to, just cause I like to walk and just feel I've accomplished that down as well.
You're in a place where the weather is not going to get too brutal. So you can walk it at least during the school time of the year when it's not summertime.
Exactly. It's February here right now and it's 60 degrees outside.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard enough of that. Okay. So, so obviously you're into school now. I mean, were you in a special dorm that allowed you to be so close to your classes, or was that just the nature of the campus?
I actually was in the furthest dorm from my classes, from anything that I even needed to go to. So no matter what, I was going to need to learn the busing system as it is. So after my freshman year, when I moved to a house near campus, I knew right where one of my bus stops were that could at least take me to the bus hub to where I could direct myself to any of the other routes that I possibly may need to get on.
Okay.
And all of the bus drivers were always very accommodating.
I'm sure. I mean, and that's the thing about just learning to advocate for yourself. And this is something we talk about a lot. Just, I mean, while you may or may not be walking with a cane, being able to say something like that to a bus driver. Now,
absolutely.
Some people are comfortable doing that. Give me examples of things like that. I mean, are you comfortable speaking to someone like that? Is it because you're have a cane in your hand, or even when you don't have a cane in your hand?
Well, when I was learning the bus routes and everything with my mobility teacher, he just kind of said, every time I get on the bus, just make sure I'm on the right one and everything. And every time I get on, I eventually got very familiar with certain bus drivers because it was the same bus drivers for each route. So they kind of knew me when I would be getting on the bus for that point in time at that specific route during the day, and they Sage, you hopping on? Like it was very very, very helpful after the first week or so getting to know all the bus drivers, even just because they were familiar with where I even needed to get off, and they would tell me when to get off as well. I would ask for that at first, but eventually it got very, very easier.
Almost, I mean, normal is what I would call it. I mean, and
exactly, exactly.
I have a very similar experience. I mean, I take a train to work every day. I live in Hoboken, which is just across the river from Manhattan, but I go to work the other way toward Newark every day, which means I'm walking to the same train station, and my train is usually on the same track. But if it's on a different track, there are several conductors there. I don't think any of whom know my name, but all of whom know which train I'm going to. And they're all ready to tell me, oh, your train's not on track 13 today. Your train's on track 15 today. And they're prepared to guide me and offer help and all those types of things. I think that kind of thing is really important where after a year of living here, they ask me questions like, hey, so what is the deal? I see you having a cane, using your cane sometimes. Sometimes you're not using your cane. Sometimes you look straight down instead of up. And I've developed some of these kinds of things that I do just so other people know that I'm not looking at them, because sometimes I don't want to be facing someone if they're going to expect me to see them and those types of things. So just being in a place where things are normal, I think, is really, really important. That said, being able to navigate outside of those areas is really a learned skill and somewhere that I'm very comfortable having my cane, just to be able to signal to others that I'm in an unfamiliar place and if you want to ask me if I need help, that's awesome.
Absolutely. And there's a bunch of visually impaired people at this campus. So the disability office is, this was nothing unfamiliar for somebody like me to come to school here, which was very interesting for me at first when I got here.
Yeah. I mean, interesting. And I'll go ahead and echo, not always common. I mean, some people are having to kind of blaze that path for themselves and kind of create their own path because no one's kind of forged that path ahead of them. And so they kind of have to ask for things instead of be offered things. And that's not really comfortable, not only not comfortable for anyone. I mean, it's not comfortable, especially for a college student who is at a place where you're already just trying to fit in and you don't want to make too much noise and you don't want people, like, you don't want to be the difficult one. And I certainly understand that perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, walking around, it's still very nice. Even if I look like I'm going in the right direction, I know where I am. There's always that random person walking by to just make sure I am doing fine when I'm possibly looking like I'm struggling, walk around a building or something, or trying to find a classroom or anything, something like that.
Yeah. So I know you obviously were surrounded by people back, in your high school in Huntsville, and then at your, I'm going to call it some kind of deaf and blind school that you went to after high school. And then obviously in college, you've been surrounded by a great support system, but it doesn't take knowing you or meeting you and knowing you for too long to know that your family's obviously been like a huge support system for you as well. And they, like,
absolutely,
parents, sister, and everyone have surrounded you with some of the, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, if Lee would like to say something about that, she probably could hit the nail on the head better than I could with that.
Let me see if I correctly labeled her here. There are like a million people calling from your zip code, by the way, or your area code, by the way.
Really?
Lee, is that you?
Yeah, you got me.
Hey, Lee, how are you?
I'm good.
If you just want to share the perspective, kind of what was it like hearing about this? I think for like most of us, your family had not heard of LHON before, and correct me if I'm wrong there, but I mean, just knowing this is something that's affecting your brother, and how did it affect you, and how did you respond?
Yeah, no, honestly, I mean, I think like most of us, we had never heard of it. We were, you know, strangers to this disease. And, you know, honestly, right away when we thought it was MS, that's scary. That's definitely a very scary thing. And once we were able to get the proper diagnosis, I will never forget. It's difficult news to hear. But when my very first conversation with Sage after he was diagnosed was, he was just like, well, wait, look, it's not like I'm dying. I've just got to live life a little bit differently. And here I am, protective big sis, like wiping the tears away, trying to, you know, hide the fact that I'm upset. I'm like, oh yeah, that's all good, bud. We're going to get through this. But, the big thing about Sage and why he is so easy to kind of, support is goes back to his always positive attitude. You know, losing your vision is, it's a big deal. It's not like, you know, losing the sense in your finger, something so minor like that. Sage is, always been able to have a positive attitude and kind of power through everything, and nothing has slowed him down. So I would say over the years, I wouldn't say it's gotten easier for him, but it has certainly been exciting to kind of witness him, get better in life and get better at getting around on his own and picking his clothes out on his own and just doing daily tasks that, you know, 3 years ago, my mom or I had to do for him, that he's now able to kind of do on his own. So from the big sister perspective, it's certainly been a roller coaster, but I always kind of go back to my main point. It's easy to support somebody like Sage who is always able to find the positive and push through the hard times.
Yeah,
I don't know if that really answers the question, but it's a long-winded one.
Yeah, no, I think it did. I mean, first I'd say that I don't think it takes going blind for a sister or girlfriend to want to pick out their brother or boyfriend's clothes. But beyond that, I mean, I think it's very true. I mean, and I'd like to just point out that you weren't living near him. I think a lot of families kind of step in and are able to do these things because they're nearby. I mean, you were living, I'm not sure where you were living, maybe Georgia, maybe Florida, at the time.
Yeah, I was in away Atlanta from when, where he first, was. When he was first diagnosed.
and yet you leaned in and did a lot of these things. But one thing you pointed out, which I think is really important to mention for, I mean, anyone here who is a friend or family of someone who's affected, lots of times it is really hard to hear that news about someone you're close to, and they almost feel guilty being sad themselves. I mean, I'm not putting words in your mouth, but I know people who felt that way. I know my mom felt that way, and not because she's the one who passed it on to me. Just, I know my sister and my brother and my cousin felt guilty and would say things like, you're the worst person for this to happen to, and yet you're the best person for this to happen to because you can make it through it. But there's an amount of guilt that you feel weird, and then you feel even guiltier for that. And you want to be able to be supportive, but you need to care for yourself too. And I'd like to, I mean, as someone who's affected and has seen this affect people who are not affected, we use the word affected for people who lost their vision. And I think that's kind of a misnomer in that this disease affects all of us, affects everyone on this call and anyone who's related to someone with vision loss, because it comes into your life and affects it. It changes it. And it doesn't do it on a daily basis, maybe for all of you, but I think we do need to recognize that fact and point that out and be there for friends and family and be there for each other as this kind of changes all of our lives. So I just wanted to say that. And that's something that occurred to me as you were talking about how it affected you. So thank you for being there for Sage, and thank you for all of the caregivers here. Okay, moving on a little bit. I know you're still here with us, Sage, I think. But let's talk about college a little bit. I mean, how did your hobbies, you said you were talking about playing tennis before. Tennis is obviously something I played a whole bunch before as well. And while I know about blind tennis, it's not something I've leaned into. What kind of hobbies did you kind of get involved in, and what kind of groups did you get involved in college? The way your sister talked about you certainly didn't allow it to kind of keep you from being involved at Alabama in different ways. So what things did you find to be a part of there at school?
Absolutely. I joined a fraternity my freshman year, and I've got a great network of friends now. I love all those guys. They help me out way too much. But as opposed to doing tennis or golf or everything like I used to, I definitely would love to, but I'll still play golf a good bit. I love playing golf. My friends and I will go and play at a local golf course here a good bit. But I still will go work out and stuff twice, three times a week. I actually started doing CrossFit again this semester with a friend of mine from high school. So that was really exciting. And I've just tried not to fall back behind on my activities, because, I mean, if I do, I'll get kind of bored. but no, I mean, there's plenty I've gotten myself involved with now, and it's easy to get through my day after looking at it. Like, after I get through, I mean, I'll go work out during the day, or I'll go hit some golf balls at least, not even play with a friend or something. And just, I mean, it's easier to look forward through the week knowing I've got plenty of those things that I can take advantage of with great people. And
of course. Both Jessica and I wanted to Jessica and I and her mom actually were all doing CrossFit when I first met Jessica, and we used to talk about the moves that we found most typical with vision loss, and we talk about box jumps and wall balls, and what kind of things are most typical for you. Do you have moves that you like the most, either because of not having vision or in spite of not having vision?
Absolutely. I didn't get to do CrossFit too much before I lost my vision. I've definitely worked out doing motions like that beforehand, but now I actually did box jumps for the first time this Monday, and that was a little scary. But I just stacked a few plates on top of each other, and I mean it went very well. Just the not necessarily fear of hitting my feet a little earlier or something and falling, but just the thought of the motion that you're going through to land and actually get off perfectly fine and do it 100 more times. But
exactly.
Anything overhead as well, though, as far as snatches or overhead squats, thrusters, anything like that with a bar, doing it overhead, I try to avoid, just because by the slight chance I don't know what I'm about to lift up and like maybe hit the bar on something, might hit my head on the bar, I don't know. And yeah. I mean, bailing from the bar is never fun.
Exactly.
But and as far as like kipping and stuff goes, like pull ups, that was very hard for me as well.
But you're moving your face.
Just
because
of the motion, right? Yeah. And like you're essentially just like slinging your body in a motion that is kind of hard to grasp if you can't like actually see the way that they're doing it. And
exactly to describe to everyone kind of what Sage is talking about. I mean, a kipping pull up is basically a pull up where you almost do a like swing motion as you're going to the top and use your momentum to pull you up. But as Sage said, without being able to see it or ever see it, it's really hard to describe. And it's one of the things where, like you said, Sage, that without someone being able to show you how to do it, they can't force your body into that motion. So you don't have that mental memory of it. So yeah, it's a really good thing to point out.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Go ahead. Sorry. I was just going to say one more thing about that, but go ahead.
No, I was gonna move on to the last pillar of kind of what Sage is this community. And to me, at least, I mean, something that is really important to me and to a lot of the people here, and just being open and honest about vision and those types of things in a way that can help this community out. We all have the ability to help this community, whether it's through fundraising or awareness and these types of things. And one of the first things I learned about you when I first heard of you a few years ago now, is these things that you do through your fraternity and these different events that you've done throughout the years to raise money, and raise awareness, both within your friend groups, but also beyond that. So I don't know if you or Lee want to speak to that a little bit and where you came up with those ideas and all you've done over the years, since this first affected you.
I'll let Lee hit on that because she was the original factor of all of this, actually.
Yeah. Hey, Andy, I'm happy to touch on that. So, going back to when Sage was first diagnosed, much like any, you know, protective family member, I wanted to help. I wanted to do something to at least try and make a difference. And honestly, you know, I can't go find a cure myself. So I pretty much decided just to start raising money. And I knew by doing that, Sage would at least see that everybody around him is rallying around him to support him and not only support him, but support, you know, finding a cure. So within the first year, like I said, I started the fund about a week after Sage was diagnosed. And within the first year, I think that we had raised upwards of $50,000-$60,000. And then kind of everything kind of started from there. Within a year and a half or two after that, his fraternity brothers in Tuscaloosa, one of the main ones though was a guy he grew up with in Huntsville, Miller Jackson. They started a fraternity party in Tuscaloosa, and then from there I brought it to Huntsville. And in Huntsville, oh my gosh, the support was crazy. I think that we had like over 500 people come to the event. And in total, I don't even know how much we've raised in total at this point, but it's been upwards of probably $120,000-$130,000. But I thought that was the best way for us to try and really make a difference. And we've met a ton of people through the community. There's one in Huntsville. I think he's on the call, John Walters, who actually lives down the street from my grandfather. We've really met so many interesting people that are also as part of this community. So that's kind of where it started, and I know it's only going to go up from here.
Yeah. So I know other people have like been a little intimidated by starting something like that themselves. I mean, you obviously were not. What kind of groups are you raising money for, and who would you recommend other people kind of reach out to start things like that? Are there groups that have already been established that these people can kind of piggyback on to raise money for?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not easy asking for money. I'm not going to like sugarcoat it and say that we raised all this money and it was easy, because it certainly wasn't. You know, people don't want to donate money most of the time. It's awkward, it's uncomfortable, but it didn't affect me. I knew that I was doing it for a good cause along with everybody else that it contributed to raising money for the foundation. For us, the last event that we had, it's called Shades for Sage. I actually kind of tapped into some of the resources of Alabama Rare, which I'm not sure what, I'm sure there's a similar kind of organization in other states, but in Alabama, it is a foundation strictly devoted just to rare diseases. And mitochondrial diseases actually fall under a rare disease category. So we were able to tap into some of their resources. They gave us, you know, some social media posts, email blasts, things like that. And I went to high school with a girl who's affected by one. So that's kind of how I was able to tap into that resource. But I would 100% recommend trying to utilize somebody else's following to create yours, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I know for those out here who are maybe interested in helping out, not interested in doing their own kind of event, which I know requires a lot of work, like Lee mentioned, there are Energy Life Walks. I butchered that name, and I'll have Alyssa correct me in a minute, put on by UMDF all the time across the country, and kind of participating with those. Those are put on by UMDF, United Mitochondrial Disease Foundation, which is what our organization actually feeds into. So all the money raised there is used to help find cures for mitochondrial diseases and do research in this realm. So even if you don't have the ability to start an organization on your own or start an event by yourself, like many people here have done, just participating in something like that can be really impactful. And like Lee and Sage mentioned, you can meet other people in this community as a result, and really easy to piggyback on the back of those and become part of this. So I know we've chatted for a while now, so I want to go ahead and open up the call to everyone else for any questions they have for Sage or anyone else. And I'll do that here. Assuming we don't have too much background noise, I'll go ahead and leave everyone unmuted. All right. We've got everyone here now. And I want to go ahead and open up the floor for questions for anyone who has any questions for Sage or Lee.
Okay, I'll start it. It's Lisa from Canada.
Lisa, I'm going to let you, Lisa, I want you to get that, but I just because I can, I want to echo for anyone who knows they have a lot of background noise, you do still have the ability to mute yourself by just pressing the mute button on your phone. Since I've unmuted everyone, I wanted to give that disclaimer. But Lisa, sorry for cutting you off, and go ahead.
That's okay. And the prompts are still the same. It did say star 6 to mute and star 7 to unmute.
Oh, fantastic.
So, Sage, your story blows me away, first of all. Your positivity at such a young age. I have an 18-year-old son, and that's my worst fear, is that this happens to him. But if it ever does, you're certainly the person that I would refer him to talk to, because I can't believe how positive you are and continuing on. And obviously you have a huge support system. Your sister is absolutely amazing to step in right away and do whatever she possibly can. And I'm sure, as well as, you know, your mom and other members of your family have done so too. But I commend your sister on what she's done to this point. It says an awful lot for the special bond that you must have. And I have a question. You say you're in college or university.
Yes, I
ask what you're taking?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm studying consumer science marketing. That's my major. I'm essentially studying a bunch of public policy. You can kind of go into any field you want under the CSM major. It's really consumer based for the real world, knowing what to expect from your consumers in an organization.
Well, good for you. And how long of a program is that?
It's a 3-year program, but of course, after all of the prerequisites that I would have to get through, like, certain math or English or history and even science. But now I'm strictly in my major, so I'm taking predominantly public policy, mainly a bunch of political science in a nutshell.
Wow, good for you. That's tremendous. Your positivity blows me away. I'm much older than you, but I think it's absolutely amazing. And I'm sure the fact that you are familiar with modern day technology, the iPhone and all that kind of stuff probably helped with the transition immensely, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. There were some things I needed to learn, though. VoiceOver was a little challenging at first. There are some hotkeys that I definitely needed to pick up on that took some time, but I'm very advanced with my phone now, which is amazing.
Well, good for you, and, you know, congratulations on being so positive, and, you know, your sister's absolutely amazing, as well as, I'm sure, moms usually don't get a whole lot of credit, and dads and stuff, but, you know, I think it really blows me away what your sister has done for you and reached out to help you as much as possible. And like Andy said, there is a guilt for the caregivers, and we all need to recognize that is there. So it's not just us affected. Everyone is affected in some way. So congratulations to you and all the best.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your question.
Hey, Sage, this is Lance in Indianapolis. Appreciate you sharing your story with us, and I'm impressed by your level of energy and what you're doing. I'm in school right now, and I was wondering specifically if you use magnification, and how did you do math, or how are you doing math? It's one of the bigger challenges I'm encountering now.
Absolutely. That was by far the hardest thing for me to get through in college. I had my math requirement coming in besides two classes, and with the disability office on campus, they provide enough accommodation, at least for me, to learn it and learn the algorithms so that I could at least get through the testing. And one-on-one help from my teacher really, really made that better for me to get a hand on things. It was not easy at all, and that was definitely one thing I'm glad I'm done with. Math was always very difficult for me before I had vision as well, and I was honestly very worried that I would have had to either change my major or something again, because I had to get through math 112 here, which was definitely a bit of a speed bump for me. I actually had to take it twice. But getting through it with all of my technology and everything, I can't use any magnification, but I am strictly auditory. And as far as note taking goes, there is a note taker in every class that I have. And so that is basically where I get my groundwork for all of my tests and everything that I need to study for. But as far as homework goes and things like that, any accommodation that I would need with the math, I could go to the disability office or my major building, like the human environmental sciences building, and I could get a tutor there to sit down and help with me if I scheduled it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been pretty hairy. I mean, the way I'm working math problems, and I can't use magnification either. I think we're in the same, or about the same level or close to it anyway, but I will just open up a Word document, and if it's some of the math, the JAWS won't read a lot of the math, mm-hmm. and the stuff that it will, so somebody will either read me the problem, but I'll just open up a Word document and write it out in a form I can understand, and then go to the next line and start to work the problem piecemeal. And I don't, so it's a nuts and bolts thing, and it's been tough, I'll tell you. That's why I was asking, you know, what you did.
Exactly. That was probably the most tedious thing that I've had to go through as far as school aspects have gone since I've lost my vision. But definitely some one-on-one work from my teacher was the only way I would have been able to get through math at all. Thank you so much for the question, by the way.
Well, thanks for your answer. It gives me, you know, a little bump of hope there, and you know,
definitely,
it can be done. You know, I mean, what you're saying is, you know, it can be done. So it's
exactly.
I appreciate it.
Once you get through the math, it's all uphill from there.
I must believe you, sir.
Absolutely.
Any other questions out there? Comments?
Lee or Shades, this is Lissa. Can you tell us a little bit more about the Shades for Sage, about the event? Like, what is the event? What exactly do you do?
Lee?
Yeah, hey, I'm happy to take that one, Sage. Essentially, so last year was, I think it was probably the most exciting one, just based, you know, because of the strong turnout. But we had somebody playing the guitar, just playing very, like, classical rock music, Dave Matthews, et cetera. We had over 25 items up for silent auction, ranging from PGA Championship tickets to somebody renting out their condo in Orange Beach, Alabama for the weekend. We had a special drink special, and then we had a blind putting contest, basically, where you were blindfolded, and then if you made the putt, you received like a Yeti cup. We had about 30 Yeti cups donated from a local shop in Huntsville. That's kind of the main activity, I guess, of the night. And the putting activity kind of was inspired from Jeremy, because, you know, everybody, we like to keep up with Jeremy and his golf game, and now Sage really does enjoy playing golf as well. So that's kind of where that came from. But essentially, it's just a night to create more awareness about what Sage is going through and bring the community together. Great, thanks.
If you're holding your questions because we're being recorded right now, I do want to let everyone know, if you want to hang out, hang tight. At some point, I will stop the recording. If there are others who didn't have a chance to introduce themselves at the beginning, I want you to have a chance to do that, even if you would rather not do that when it's being recorded. But I want to give everyone a few more minutes to ask any questions they have.
This is Patrick from Northern California. Do you look above the ball, behind the ball? Do you use a caddy, or what's your kind of method for golfing? So I'm getting back into golf right now.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. I can't see the ball perfectly to put the club face right behind it. I'll essentially just get the ball on the tee and put the club directly behind it, slide my hand up the shaft so I know I've got the club face perfect right where I need it. And if I need to adjust moving, like, where I'm lined up or anything, the people I play with kind of know how I'm going to hit the ball. For example, Lee's husband, my brother-in-law, he knows I'm going to hook that ball every time. So he'll aim me a little right each time. So it was all about feel. And, my swing, honestly, probably got better after the fact of losing my vision. Just the confidence thing of even not having to think about looking at the ball and just looking at the same place and knowing that I'm going to hit the ball. But just as long as I was making the right contact with the face, that's the main thing that I was having to get down over and over and over again. So now I know I'm not at least going to just hit the person at the driving range right next to me.
Right. Thanks a lot.
Definitely. Thank you for the question.
I have a question. It's Susan from Canada. And Sage, I was interested in that you said you were learning Braille. And I wondered how far you got and whether you use it on a regular basis.
Yes. So I got decently far into grade four. I was not a complete grade five. I learned mostly contracted braille at that point. I used it for a solid 2 years, I want to say, after the fact of going to the school I learned it at. But the only times I would ever really use it a bunch would be outside of certain classrooms, knowing, like, trying to figure out if it's the right room number or if if I'm outside of a building and I don't know the name of the building, I could walk up to the front of it and it would have the complete address on it to the right of it. And that's mostly where I would use Braille for the most part. But other than that, I have not needed to grasp it that much since then. I'm very, I just use my technology for the most part.
Are you going to try and retain your skill with Braille? Because I imagine it would be something that could be forgotten if you don't use it.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm definitely not as good with Braille as I used to be. I should get back into it now, honestly, now that I'm approaching graduating from college, and I will probably need to use Braille a little bit more at some point after, especially with taking down notes and things like that. It's much, much more helpful typing with a Brailler than it is with a computer keyboard. That is for sure. I can definitely
you find that easier?
As far as taking notes and getting things down on paper quick enough to go on to the next topic of whatever a teacher may be telling me or whatever I may be needing to take down, I could type a whole paragraph in 10 seconds with Braille as opposed to a minute on my computer.
Is that because, figuratively speaking. Yeah, is that because you're typing it in contracted Braille?
Absolutely, absolutely. And typing on a computer, I would go back and recheck what I typed, but when I was doing the contractions, I would know exactly which keys I'm pressing without slipping, because sometimes I would slip and press the wrong key, and then I'd go back and have to delete it, and then just make sure I knew exactly where I was with my cursor on the specific document. But with a Brailler, I knew once it was done, I've got to move it down and slide it all the way back over and keep going. So that way I would know I'm on the right line. And I would just line down twice, having plenty of space to make sure I've got more than enough room to separate each line from my notes.
Wow, well, you've done really well. I'm trying to learn Braille, and I'm somewhere in grade two right now, and it's not easy.
It definitely is not easy. Once you grasp grade one very well, contracted Braille is very, very easy to pick up on with all the different combinations of the cell.
Good. Well, I'm slogging through punctuation right now.
Okay. You're getting very far along. That's impressive. You're gonna get it down good. I have no doubt.
I almost want to give Lance a chance to answer your question as well. Lance is probably our Braille expert if we had one. I want to say you read what Count of Monte Cristo in Braille like a month or two ago, Lance.
I've read some novels, and I do enjoy, you know, being engaged in the literature in that way. Where I enjoy audio, but I read about 20 to 30 minutes of Braille each day, and I enjoy it.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. When did you learn Braille? Was it recently or a long time ago?
I finished learning contracted Braille in the spring of 2017. Mm-hmm. And I started, the first time I put my fingers on Braille was sometime in the spring of the previous year. So there were some lapses, but I try to encourage people because I think it is literacy, to a certain extent. And, I just enjoy it.
Yeah.
So I think it's, it is easy to get away from what Sage was talking, because the technology, I don't have to use Braille. I don't need it for a lot of things. I mean,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have to give a speech for school on Monday, and they told me to have a few note cards. Well, I guess I can Braille out some 3x5 cards, and which is what I did. But technology will do the job for my schooling, but I try to stay in it, and I have a Braille display now, and you know, I love reading Braille, so I
encourage
you.
Lance,
do you have a math question for me?
What's that?
Yes, that was the same person, Sage, yes.
Maybe try brailing out on some pages for your math. That might help you take down some of the things that you would need to remember for your notes and things like that.
Yeah, I did take Hadley's Nemeth course, and I mean, I've got all my notes and the work I did, but I just haven't used it. And those Word documents that for the math, I save them, and so it just shows how I work. But oh, it hurts my brain thinking about that algebraic stuff. It's ridiculous.
Oh yeah.
Fell asleep.
I was going to say, is somebody snoring again?
Yeah. As long as everyone keeps talking, I can't figure out who it is, but that's okay. They may have just woken up. That's okay. Well, I know we're in the top of the hour now. So first and foremost, I want to say thank you to Sage. Thank you to Lee. Thanks both for joining us. I am going to go ahead and kind of wrap up the call a little bit, but I'm going to then turn the recording off and allow people to ask other questions if you want of me, or introduce yourselves if you'd like. But first, I want to remind everyone, thank you all for joining. Our next call will be March 6th at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific. If you would like to join us as a speaker, you're welcome to reach out to any of us or email us at lhonlive@gmail.com. Anyway, thank you all so much. Really excited to have you all. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and turn off the recording and allow the conversation to continue.
Andy?
Yes.
Before you stop the recording, do you want to maybe Lissa
mention
a conference?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that. Lissa, are you there? Do you want to kind of give dates of both conferences coming up?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. Like you're saying, this is the first time you have two conferences open for registration at the very same time in North America. So no matter where you're located in North America, you have a conference coming up near you. And so if you're sort of on the western side of the country, or if you have a desire to travel to Vancouver, get your passport ready and register on the LHON Canada.ca site, and that event takes place on Saturday, April 27th, and there's a social the evening before, and then there's a fun sports day the following Sunday, the 28th. So again, that's Vancouver, the 26th evening, 27th is the conference, and the 28th, and it'll be a full-on conference with some really good scientific speakers, Dr. Valerio Corelli, Dr. Austin Kranja, not sure who else, but it's aligned with the ARVO Vision Research Conference going on in Vancouver. So it'll be a great mix of science and social. And then for those on the East Coast / people who want to be in the DC area, we've got our sort of traditional conference in collaboration with the UMDF, the United Mitochondrial Disease Foundation. And the actual conference is on June 28th, 29th. It's sort of the double half day format like we had last year. So it kicks off with a mixer on Friday the 28th at 11 a.m. And then runs through up until just before lunch on Saturday the 29th. And then you have the opportunity to come in a day early because the UMDF is running Day on the Hill at the Capitol. So if you come in early, there's a mixer and a prep session on the evening of June 26th. And then the UMDF provides buses and they set things up so that people can visit their congresspeople. And it's a lot of fun. Jennifer Mollick, I don't know if you're on the line, but I know you've done this before. Do you have just a minute to tell people what Day on the Hill is all about? Nope. Okay. Well, I will tell you that it's a lot of fun, and you get to, like I said, you get to go with people who have other mitochondrial diseases, and again, UMDF has it all organized, and you tell your story, and a lot of times they're really touched by, you know, the sudden loss of vision. It's sort of a shocking, and it gets people to sort of step up and sign on to provide additional government funding for mitochondrial diseases, including LHON. So again, you can come as early as Wednesday night in Alexandria, Virginia, and things are happening, and it runs through Saturday at lunchtime. And the registration just opened today. And if you go to the umdf.org site, and look under Find Support, there's a national symposium. And then from there, you can go to the family program, and it's got the scholarship form is now open. So there are opportunities to apply for a travel scholarship if the cost of traveling to the event and paying for the registration is a challenge. That's an opportunity. And then the base price is $85 for the session, but there's an early bird special, so it's half price. So that's kind of an overview of your two options to come get together and do this kind of stuff in person.
Okay.
Melissa, I did talk to Cliff Gorski from the UMDF the other day, and he's working on getting the new asks for Day on the Hill. And once I get those, I will get them out on the LHON page so everybody knows what our asks are for on Day on the Hill.
That's awesome. And can you just give a sense of what it's like to do it? I mean, did you have any idea what you were heading into, and was it worth doing from your perspective?
I had no idea what Michael and I were getting into. And one of our asks was getting the House of Representatives to sign on to a caucus for mitochondrial disease, and that is still one of our asks. And Michael really hit it off with his story with the House of Representatives, Rick Nolan from Minnesota, and he signed on that day to be on the caucus. I think the stories of losing your vision so suddenly hits home for a lot of the Congress people, and it's great to have your story be told. So I just strongly encourage everybody to go.
And you've like turned it into like a deep relationship with the broader mitochondrial disease community, especially locally, but also nationally, haven't you?
Correct. There's three families or two other families in Minnesota that I've connected with, and we get together and we do UMDF family gatherings three times a year. We do a Christmas party and then a couple other times. And actually, I am heading out to D.C., not with Michael this year, but with these two other families.
And Andy mentioned the Energy for Life Walk earlier. You do that, too, and that's also associated with UMDF.
Yes, that is with the UMDF. You, Lissa, had gotten me going the first year that we attended. It was like 2015. And this will be 10th year in Minnesota for the walk, so we're hoping we get a good crew.
Thanks for both of you. And if you have any questions for any of those, we're happy to answer those, point you in the right direction. There will be, obviously, there's information on both Facebook page and LHON.org or LHONCanada.ca. If you have questions, feel free to send those our way. With that, I'll go ahead and wrap up the recording. And Sage, Lee, thank you for joining. If you want to hang around, you're certainly welcome to, but if you're not able to, I understand. I'm going to go ahead and turn the recording off.